Hello and welcome to ELT Under the Covers, the English language teaching podcast. Today's guest, we have a teacher with over a decade's worth of experience teaching over half a dozen different countries. She's currently pursuing a master's in technology and language teaching along with Delta, while also running a successful online teaching business and a YouTube channel called Just Teach. Welcome to the show, Teacher Little Mary.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Well, the introduction sounds a bit better than my real life.
That's I'm surprised you don't have time for doing this interview. How do you do it? It boggles my mind, juggling all these balls.
Wow, that's a tricky question. Actually, this would be my lunchtime. So I'm just using my lunchtime for the interview. That's it. So today I just had a ready meal and everything is great.
I feel guilty about this now. So
that's it. So
organization is an interesting question. I think that'd be something interesting to get onto later. Mm-hmm. We normally start with Neil. Do you want to do the honors of the first question?
Yes. Please, can you go ahead and kind of wind back the clock a little bit and give us your origin story? You know, tell us when it started, where your teaching path started, and how did you get to where you are today with this crazy schedule?
Sure. So I will try to cut a long story short because it's actually really long. So basically, I started my career as a PE teacher. I studied physical education at university with a specialization in bodybuilding. So I was actually training the big guys. And I started a second university, so I was studying journalism. But I had a dream. I really wanted to go to Australia. So something very interesting happened to me. Basically, a friend of mine, he told me, look, there is like, you know, these kind of events, education events, where colleges and universities, they just, you know, gather together in a place and like a fair, you know, educational fair. And he told me, look, there's something going on. You should go and check options for you to go to Australia. And I was like, well, I'm broken. You know, I can't really go anywhere. And he told me, well, but you can just check. Maybe they let you pay installments or something like that. So I was okay. So why not? No, you know, just go in and check. And basically, when I got to this event, there was a stand. And it was a school from South Africa in Cape Town. And there was a competition going on. And it was a photograph competition. And basically they said, well, you have to take a very creative photo. And the best photo, the most creative photo is going to win a trip to South Africa with a business course and everything paid for. And I was, well, why not? So as you can see, I've got very long hair. So I just put my hair up and I pretended I was a lion. Very ridiculous. And somehow people liked it and I won the competition. So basically, I won a trip to South Africa, everything for free, a course, a flight ticket, accommodation, food, everything paid for. Mm. So this is when things started to change a little bit. So I was working as a personal trainer and, you know, studying journalism and la la la. But when I got to South Africa, I met loads of Colombian people. Mm-hmm. And they were so friendly. They were so nice. You know, I just fell in love with the culture and I didn't even know where Colombia was, you know, in the map. Mm-hmm. And they kind of convinced me that I had to move to Colombia. I was young and single. This was 12 or 13 years ago. And I was, well, why not? So I got a loan from the bank and I moved to Colombia. And when I got there, obviously, I started looking for jobs as a PE teacher, but I couldn't speak Spanish very well. So my Spanish was very bad. My level was terrible. And obviously, in Colombia, the salaries are not very high. So I couldn't find like a proper job with a good salary. So I had, someone just told me, well, you speak language. You know, I speak other languages apart from English. So they were like, okay, we really need English teachers here. So why don't we start teaching English? Mm. I was, well, yes, I really love grammar, you know, and I'm a teacher. So I've got the didactics, the methodologies and everything. Mm-hmm. So this is what I did. So basically, I got my first student. The internet wasn't a big thing because this was a long time ago. But I put an ad on a website, and I don't even remember the website. And I got a student, and basically, he loved me. And he was studying in university for like rich people. So he told me, look, all these people, they've got money. They need private teachers. and they need to learn language. So why don't you just rent a place close to the university and you can start running your own business? And this is what I did. So basically, I started with just some students, a few students, and by like 3 months after starting, I had 10 lessons per day. Holy and God. Companies contacting me. So basically, but obviously, at that time, we didn't have like materials and already lessons. So I had to create everything myself. So I was creating like 10 lessons per day.
Holy
and I had groups, I had companies, I had private students, so all types of, all sorts of students you can imagine. And then, okay, I will try to run a bit because then we've got 10 years still to...
I feel like I've aged 10 years just listening to this at the beginning.
Sorry, yes. So basically, after 4 years, I decided that it was time for me to move, you know, to do something different because I was still single and young. So I came to Europe and I was in Barcelona for some time, but then the crisis was very bad. So it was the same. I went to France. I couldn't find a job because guess what? I cannot speak French. So I'm trying. I'm still trying. And well, I ended up in the UK. Right. So I spent many years in the UK. So I was in London first, and then I was, in Bournemouth, Portsmouth, Brighton. And I couldn't work as a teacher because obviously in Europe, they ask you for qualifications as an English teacher.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do it. So I started working with language schools, but not teaching, just doing administration, accommodation, transfers, and coordination, you know, coordinating like the administrative part in general. Then, obviously, I have to go really quick through these things. But basically, I moved to Australia for some time. I was doing the same, working, you know, with English agencies. So I was helping like students, you know, they were moving to Australia. So finally, my dream came true. I was in Australia for 3 years.
Slight detour, just a little bit.
And basically, I had my first daughter in Australia. And by that time, I was married. So we decided to just come back to Europe. I went to England again. I was working again with language schools. We moved to Malta for some time.
Wow.
So I was working with a fantastic English school in Malta. It's called Ace English Malta. So I was a sales executive. And finally, right, hopefully you are still awake. Finally, I had another kid, another child in England, and my oldest daughter was diagnosed with mild autism.
Okay.
So this, because we were settled in England and we were happy and everything was great, but then when she was diagnosed, we didn't really have much support, you know, from the government or from, you know, therapies and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we decided to come to Spain, because people say that in Spain, education for autistic children or, you know, all types of disabled children is very good. So we've been living here for 4 years and I'm about to finish. I started when we got here, I was coordinating EF, Education First. So again, I was working as a coordinator. So transfers and all this kind of stuff, accommodation. Then I moved to International House. Mm-hmm. And finally, one day I woke up and I said, what am I doing? Because my passion is teaching. So I should be teaching, not, you know, preparing invoices or dealing with crazy accommodation, host families and transfers. And I was getting so stressed. So this is when finally I decided to pursue my Trinity Cert ESOL, because I was looking for a CELTA course. I wanted to take a CELTA course, but the dates were not very good for me. So I took the Trinity Cert ESOL.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started a PG Cert with the University of Birmingham in CELTA. And finally, I got to the point that you mentioned.
Very good.
33 countries later. Yes.
So, there's a lot of things that kind of come to mind from your story, actually, Mary. One of the things is you do seem to be very hardworking as a personality trait. Would that be fair to say?
Yes. I work really hard, especially now that the situation here in Spain is not the best one. So obviously, for my husband, it's not great at the moment. So I don't really have a choice, you know. Sometimes I'm teaching 50, 60 lessons per week, And there is a small detail that I had another child last year. So I've got a baby right now. So now I've got three kids. And but yes, I do. I've been, you know, I don't consider myself addicted to work, but I really like the industry, the area.
Right.
So I do this with passion. Obviously, sometimes it's a bit too much. I work more than I should, mm-hmm. you know, but yes. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, that's incredible. 60 teaching 60 classes a week. That would be far too much for me. I would find that very mentally.
Yeah, along with the studying and the kids and the YouTube channel.
That's amazing,
and I feel your pain.
Students telling me, teacher, I didn't have time to do the homework, and I just think to myself, well, they are single, young, they don't work. And yes, I understand. Oh, bless you, you didn't have time.
Yeah, and you do have a bit of an entrepreneurial mindset, obviously. I mean, even when even back in the day, you kind of started up your own business and you were teaching people, you know, getting one-to-one classes as your own business. And now you're kind of doing a lot of sort of that kind of stuff as well. You've got your kind of social media presence and your channel, and as well as other things. Is that something have you always been like that, or is that something you developed over time?
No, I think it was the need, you know, I really needed to do something. So, for example, here in Spain, well, I had my job, my stable job with International House, but I wasn't happy. And it wasn't the school was great, you know, everyone was amazing, but it wasn't my thing. And then I thought, okay, if I start working for a club, for a school, I know the problem, that both of you were in Spain as well. You've been working here. So probably you know that if you want to work for a school here in Spain, you usually have to work from 4 to 10.
Yeah.
These are the hours. And basically the payments are not very high. So after tax, you don't get more than like 10 or 11 euros. And I couldn't survive on this. So that's why I thought, you know, starting my own thing, I could charge my own rates and I can set my own rates and I can increase my rates. And I'm teaching, yes, it's true that I'm teaching from 4 to 10, but I've got flexibility. So if I've got, for example, I've got an appointment with a person, well, this is another story, but basically if I have like a medical appointment, or if my children are not feeling well, I can just move the lesson, swap things around, or change the lesson to, you know, just to teach them on Saturdays or Sundays, because I also work on weekends.
Right, because you have control over
your
schedule. Yeah, I can completely appreciate that, because I'm in a similar situation myself.
And the rates are much, much better, you know, obviously. Yeah. So, and I can increase them.
I mean, one of the things I've certainly noticed, and probably one of my contentions about the industry at the moment, is that more and more teachers are having to do that. I think that, you know, being able to rely on an employer to sort of look after you as a language teacher, especially if you're looking for it to be something more than just a backpacking experience in another country, means that very often you do have to take a bit more control over your destiny, whether that's, you know, having your fingers in multiple pies or setting up your own business. You know, do you think that's something that's becoming more important for language teachers now, that they have to learn some business skills?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Because, as I mentioned, you know, salary, the conditions in general. Obviously, I cannot talk about other countries. I can only talk about Spain at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's very tricky, especially if you've got family, because you don't want to be working every single day from 4 to 10. You've got family, you want to see your kids. I don't really see my kids at the moment. So, well, I'm trying to change this. But and the thing is, with the pandemic, loads of students, they realize that online teaching can be a very good thing, because sometimes I started before the pandemic. I was very lucky because when the pandemic hit, I had my students, you know, so for me it was even better. I was teaching like 30 hours per week. And after the pandemic, all students became online students. So this is when I started teaching 50, 60 hours. And I have to say no to students because of that, because I don't have time. So I think with the pandemic, they realized, and even the students, they are thinking like, wow, why should I go to a group lesson? Well, I also teach group lessons at the moment, but they've got the same profile and it's very personalized. So I don't teach, I teach maximum of 5 students at the moment. I could earn more money teaching more, I know, but it's a bit of a headache, you know, to organize them, because sometimes one needs to cancel, the other one has. So they want, they also want this flexibility, the students, and they realize that after the pandemic that it can be very good because it's personalized. I don't have to be sharing the teacher with other 10 or 12 students that we all know that even if we place them in the same class, it doesn't mean that they've got the same abilities. You know, some of the students, they are going to have a very high level of grammar, or some of the students, they are going to be very good at writing. But then obviously as a teacher, you have to cater to all students. So my experience teaching groups is like you always try to set the goals to the lowest student, not the highest, because otherwise, so there is this motivation thing and everything. So as students realize that, I think it's a great opportunity for teachers to make more money, you know, to have their own schedule, to have more flexibility. So yeah, I think definitely the future is just moving online. It doesn't mean that there are no drawbacks. There are loads of bad things about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss being in a classroom 100%, but I also really appreciate working online. The flexibility is incredible. Being able to work from home is really nice. I'm a technophile, so I love the technological tools that you can use to assist with the learning. I don't have to think, oh, is this school going to have like, you know, an IWB? Are they going to have like this, that, and the other? Is this going to be blocked by their firewall, this website, so I can't use that, you know? No. It's all my stuff. So, you know, I really appreciate that. But I do miss aspects of being in a classroom. I wonder if the future will hold some sort of, I don't know, like, have you got any thoughts on like VR teaching and all that kind of stuff?
VR, like virtual reality? Yeah,
like this metaverse style stuff. So I guess we're sort of talking maybe 5 or 10 years in the future.
Oh, well, no, I haven't thought there far.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. The customization is amazing. And I think in countries like Spain as well, it's obviously been massive because they were very, I don't know if the majority of your students are still Spanish.
Yeah, they
I'm
are.
Just assuming that, yeah. I remember when I was living there, they were very much against that kind of learning for one reason or another. I'm not sure whether it was cultural, or I know there was a company called OpenEng, I think, who, there was a big scandal with it. It was blended learning and it all went horribly wrong and made the news. And and ever since then, they were all very, very against this idea of kind of technological online learning.
Yeah, it's because Spanish people, well, obviously, we can all overgeneralize, but from my experience, they are a bit traditional. But it's not because of the students themselves, it's because of the system. So the system here, and I've got my kids at school, you know, I've got my kids are now 8, 7, and well, and the baby. So I've got my two daughters are, they go to school here, you know. So basically we can see that the system is very much memorization and exam. You have to memorize and you take an exam. And this causes like a big trauma, especially when when it comes to English. Most of my students, when they start with me, the first thing they say is, I can't speak English. I'm very bad at it. You know, I don't know phrasal verbs. So the first thing, even if they are beginners, they are talking about phrasal verbs. You go like, well, at the beginning, I was like, why are they talking about phrasal verbs? You know, you don't even know how to conjugate simple present. But then I understood that this is what the schools do here. They just give the lists, endless lists of phrasal verbs or structures for them to memorize. And they are just, you know, expecting them to have a 10. And I'm not teaching teenagers anymore and kids. I'm just teaching adults because I have to admit, right? I'm very good at loads of things, but I'm terrible at teaching kids. That's so, and teenagers. Very hard, very hard for me. So I stopped, but I had teenagers in the past and they were constantly stressed and they were constantly telling me, saying that, look, if I don't write, if we have a test and I don't write exactly the same thing that is in the book, my teacher is going to give me, to say it's wrong. And you go, but this is not, it's not right, because obviously there are loads of different ways of saying the same thing, but no, so they learn obviously we cannot talk about all the schools. I'm just talking about the ones that I know. And the ones that I know, 100%, they say the same thing. They learn by fear because they need to have, you know, and basically after 2 months, they don't remember anything.
That's right.
Because it's not, we all know that it's not efficient at all to give students a list of phrasal verbs with no context. You know, it's, not contextualize and say, well, memorize this and give me the meanings.
It's kind of like this industrial revolution style education, isn't it? It's the Victorian style education from the kind of late 19th century that spread around the world. And in some countries, they've started to reform it a little bit, move away from that idea of memorization exams. But
It makes sense from an institutional point of view, because you can give the materials to the teacher and say, teacher, you just have to teach this. And then, you know, like, we can grade you because we know exactly what we're teaching you and we know what the answers for the material should be. Yet it completely removes the learner experience. And
what's the point? Because obviously after some years they come to me and they are like, I can't, because this is something that I really take into consideration. And I think this is one of the reasons why my business has been so successful and I've got so many recommendations, because at the moment I don't have to market myself anymore. So I do have my YouTube channel, but this is for teachers, it's not for students. And I don't use my social media to get students because I don't need. Because Spanish people, this is something good about them, they are very loyal. So if they like you, they are going to stay with you. I've got students, they've been with me for 2.5 years and they had their exams and sometimes they passed the exams, sometimes they failed the exams and they don't care. They just want to be with me. Because I think what I try to do is just to show them what they are capable of and show them they don't have a problem with English. It's the system, you know, that made them feel like that. So I really work on students' self-esteem. And I always mention the affective filter, you know, by Crushing, that students, they really have to feel comfortable. They have to feel that you are not there to judge them, or you are not there to be upset, you know, with them if they make a mistake. So if they feel comfortable making mistakes, and if they feel comfortable talking to you, and if the lessons are fun, they are going to come back to you. So basically, sometimes I realize that it's a bit sad to say that, but sometimes I think that charisma is even more important than the method that you are using. Because if you make them feel really comfortable when they feel they need you, because obviously I empower them in such a way that they go like, wow, no one has ever told me that. You know, I thought I was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Basically, they are going to start coming back. So I don't know the point. I don't know. I can't see the point, you know, in schools just treating them as, you know, robots. Because they are going to be adults, they're going to grow up and they're going to say, well, we haven't learned anything. But obviously I cannot change the system. That's why we are moving again.
Well, it's an interesting point, because we are dealing with communication, and communication really only happens between people. So one of the things that we think we often forget about with language teachings is it's best done within a relationship. So it's almost kind of like counseling. In counseling you have this idea of if you go with a humanistic approach, this idea of unconditional positive regard, where no matter what client is in front of you, you don't bring any baggage into that relationship. You see them as they are, you try to relate as much as you can personally to them and give them a space for them to grow. That's really what happens, especially in counseling. And I think that's really important with teaching, as you say, because it allows them to kind of like unwrap all this institutional looking to the teacher, you know, like being the judgment of themselves being outsourced to this teacher or this institution, and then kind of allowing them to kind of get remove those beliefs and also build them back up as well. And, you know, trying to it sounds like you're navigating it away from kind of like this idea of like the extrinsic, this is your grade, to kind of more intrinsic, oh, I feel like I'm starting to improve. So you kind of, you're giving them that agency.
Yes.
And it is really important. And it's often kind of, I feel, missed out as a big component in, you know, courses like CELTA and such, because there's so much emphasis on pedagogy. Yeah,
yes.
Establishing a relationship is super
That's
important,
very true.
Especially
and
when doing one-to-one.
Yeah, so I'm taking the Delta course and I'm realizing that I think, yes, it's incredibly important, you know, to have lesson plans and anticipate problems and all this sort of stuff. But at the same time, yes, they don't really tackle these important things, like how is to build rapport with your students, or how to build rapport with people, and how to, that's another thing, you know, this is something a bit dangerous as well. And this is something that I've learned, you know, but it was a bit hard for me at the beginning, because at the beginning I was over friendly and I was just talking too much about the students. So this is something that I had to learn, you know, how to dose it as well. Because at the beginning, I had students crying in front of me because their boyfriends, you know, had. And so it is a bit tricky when you're teaching
language around that. He broke your heart.
Yes. No, yeah, that's okay. That's okay. But one advice I would give to teachers, you know, planning on starting one-to-one lessons, is to know the limits. Because at the beginning, I didn't. I let them talk, and this is okay, but you do have to have a limit, because otherwise what happens is they start seeing you as their therapist.
Yes.
And then, especially if they've got, so there are loads of different, you know, there are different students, obviously. So for example, if people ask me, what's the method that you use? I'm going to say, well, it depends. It depends on the student. So dog me for some of the students, so it depends on the student. So I do have some students that they just want to talk about their personal life. That's their goal. So I've got one at the moment. She loves me because I'm just listening to her. I say two words in her lesson, and she's very happy because she talks about her problems, but she's not expecting me to give her advice, because I cannot do that. I'm not a therapist. But this is one thing, because it's very clear. Her goal is very clear. But then you've got these students that they are going to take a Cambridge exam, for example, in 4 months, and they start talking about their cat and their neighbor and the problems they are having at work. And they expect you to say something back. And it's like, okay, right, I cannot really say much. So yeah. At the beginning, I was getting really involved and I was really talking. No, well, no, that's terrible. Yes, yeah, wrong. So, and then obviously this was coming back to bite me, because they were not ready for that exam. You know, they are going to take an exam, and your neighbor's relationship or your boyfriend's problems, they are not going to be a topic for the reading part of Cambridge. So they would be like, so we haven't seen this topic. And look, so this is when I started, and obviously I started feeling very stressed, because I'm not prepared for that. I'm not prepared for people telling me, oh, my mother, you know, my grandmother has cancer. And well, one thing is to say that, another thing is to bring this to the class, and you start feeling terrible. So after the lessons, I was like, oh my God, what I'm going to do, you know, her boyfriend or her mother, what can I do to help? And this is not my job. So it's really important for teachers to learn to establish. Also with, for example, I use WhatsApp to communicate with my students. So it took me some time to learn that also I had to have some limits with WhatsApp communication, because they are going to message you on Saturday and say, look, can you correct this text? And you go, no, I can't. I can't right now. Yeah, but I need it by tomorrow, because I have to do that. And at the beginning, I was kind of letting, you know, this happen. Yeah. And one day I was so stressed and I was like, no, this is not for me. I have to stop. But then I realized that it was my fault, because I was not in total control of the lessons, you know. No, obviously not with all students, but it was happening quite often. So now I'm very lucky. At the moment, I'm very lucky because I've got, you know, the privilege to choose my students, because I've got so many recommendations that I'm just like taking... starting with people with the same profile. So this is very good for my lesson planning. So for example, at the moment, I don't know in other countries, but APTIS is a very big thing from the British Council. It's a very big thing in Spain at the moment. So they are not taking Cambridge anymore. especially because of the use of English part, because it's really hard. So they're taking APTIS. So what I'm trying to do is just to have students that are going to take APTIS. So I can prepare one lesson or two lessons. So that's why, so you ask me, how can you manage, you know, so many things? So that's what I try to do. I try to optimize my time. So I prepare one or two lessons, maybe three in the week, you know, in a week, and then I can use and reuse the same lesson with different levels, because the topic is going to be the same. But if you know how to ask the right questions, and if you know how to take the activity, you know, from this point of view, or if you know how to guide the activity, you can use exactly the same material with a B1, an intermediate student, or a C1. It just depends on the way you're going to ask them the questions and the type of exercises you're going to do. So this is something that helps a lot as well. You know, if you can choose a niche, if you can have like a type of students, or more or less the same level, or more or less the same goals, obviously they're not going to be exactly the same, but more or less, so this can save you a lot of time on preparation. Right, so I'm just talking too much.
So. I think what you were saying there about the idea that, you know, we tell students, it reminded me of a quote by Mark Almond, who we spoke to a couple of months ago, which is that we often tell students, teachers, what to do in the classroom, but we don't tell them how to be. And I think that's a very good point. I think that most language teachers who've been doing the job for maybe 5 years or more will at least have some experiences of the kind of things you're talking about, where you're kind of getting involved in people's lives. And, you know, there's no sort of idea in our current sort of qualifications as to what we can be, other than these kind of nebulous, maybe useful, but kind of nebulous statements like have a person to person relationship rather than a teacher to student relationship. But then, there's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah. And having boundaries as well is essential. It's just essential in life. It's kind of a skill that it's like, well, should that be included in the Delta course? Because it kind of should be something that you just kind of just have in your life anyway. But, you know, how it applies to, you know, teaching is definitely important. I had a point and I was hoping that I'd remember what I was going to say.
Certainly a part of how you act in the classroom and how that affects the students should be something that they talk about in either the CELTA or the diploma. Was that your point, Nate?
No. Yeah. What I remember was, and I think this kind of, it's an underutilized point. It's a point that we don't, you know, talked about because it should be something that should be taught by institutions, you know, doing CELTAs, Deltas and TEFLs and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, when we look at these backpacker teachers or dancing monkey teachers, whatever you want to talk about, you know, they fill their role. But often you'll go into, I've seen it multiple times, you'll have students go into a school and they'll have a choice between this, you know, senior teacher that's very knowledgeable in English, but, you know, it's quite maybe a little bit reserved, not very personable. And then the dancing monkey backpack teacher that's, you know, got a weekend TEFL and they're all cracking out their guitar and fun and jokes and stuff like that. And they go towards this teacher. So, you know, it's not a minor point because they're getting the work. So I think it should
true.
Be something that you should really consider and think about. And it's a hard one for how would you develop that? I mean, do you know, say you finish your Delta and you have someone come on to your course, you become a mentor. What sort of kind of approach do you think? I mean, you might not have even thought about this, but what kind of approach off the top of your head would you sort of consider to how a teacher can kind of develop this attitude that you have this pat you I mean it seems to just emanate from you, but how would someone develop that?
True. Yeah, no, that's true, that I know that my personality helps a lot, you know, because especially because I had this background in physical education and, you know, I come from a very friendly country, let's say, that everyone is always dancing and laughing and talking to people, you know. So basically this, yeah, I think it comes a bit with me. So it would be a bit hard to train people. That's true. So I think, yes, it should be taught. But obviously you cannot teach personality, but I think they could at least tell students the importance of building this rapport and the importance of letting students feel comfortable. Because the thing is, you said, yes, if students, they have to choose, you know, between the academic, senior, amazing, you know, teacher, but very serious, and the entertainer, they would choose the entertainer. But my question is, what about us? I would choose the entertainer as well. And I think this is not because we don't want the academic, but I think this is because we know that if we have fun and if we are talking about interesting things, we are going to learn better. You know, if I'm talking to a student about, okay, so today we are going to go through the rules of present perfect, this is not going to stick, you know, in their mind. So if I'm very academic, very serious, very, it's not going to help, you know, to help them. So, and we as humans, you know, we as well, not just the students, because we've been students as well. So from my point of view as a student, for example, if a teacher is talking to me about a very engaging, so that's my word, you know, engaging and relevant and interesting topic, I'm going to remember things. So it's not a matter of the teacher, you know, being dancing or doing stupid things. But sometimes if we talk about less serious things, let's say, so for example, the topics that I use in my lessons, this would be one of the things I would say, you know, that you asked, like, how can we teach them? I would say first thing is to choose carefully the topics. Because if you choose engaging topics, for example, let's say I'm talking to, I started with two new students this week, right? And this is a true story. And for the first lesson, usually what I do is I just listen to them, what they've got in mind, their plans and everything. And then I go, okay, so let's have a test, you know, and they go like panicking. No, just wait for me. So I use funny things. For example, I show them an optical illusion, and I asked them to describe the photo. That's completely different, you know, to showing them a photo of a guy, I don't know, working, and ask them to describe the photo. So I'm asking them to describe an optical illusion. So they go like, I don't see it. And I go, oh no, I can't believe it. So you just see one woman, they are two. And they go, no, I can't. So they don't even realize that they are speaking in English. And this thing, you know, it's a small change that instead of showing a boring photo, I'm showing like a very engaging photo. And this is going to stick to their mind. So after 2 weeks, if I say, oh, do you remember? What is the name of this part of the body? And they don't remember. Do you remember the first class that we were talking about the lady? Oh, yes, the eyebrow. So it works. It's not like, it's not their fault that I don't think the students are, you know, silly and they just want to have, you know, these clowns. It's because it really works. So I would say first thing is to choose the topics carefully, engaging things. So I was going to say, I started with two students and both of them, it's very common for me to start with superlatives and comparatives, because this is something, I don't know other students, but Spaniards, they tend to have like a big problem with this. So instead of saying, okay, so let's go. One syllable, you add ER. What I did was I took a quiz. So for example, what is the tallest? What is the tallest? And then I'm showing Statue of Liberty, Eiffel Tower, and Big Ben. So we talk about it and they go, oh, I think it's Eiffel Tower. Oh, have you been to Paris? No. So you start, obviously, you cannot just do digression all the time. So you cannot let it go for too long. But I'm always asking personal questions in between. So this can stick in their mind. So, oh, have you been to Paris? No. And they go, oh, okay, I mean, what about, and why not? So you don't like it. And they go, oh, yes, I do like the culture. So they are talking, they are getting involved. And when they get involved, so you don't have to be personal, But do ask some personal questions, the same as the exams. You know, the exams, they are going to ask you, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite? So it's not getting into the life of the person, but just a general thing. And then they get very engaged. So, for example, I started with this. Then for like 10 minutes, we were going through the rules that I know that they know, because obviously everyone learns comparatives and superlatives at school. So I don't have to be talking about it for half an hour. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I put like a table and I hide the table and they go, I'm hiding it so you cannot read it. And they go like, oh no. And so can you just say, how would you say this, this, and that? They say it. Right. So now, do you see the difference here? Why we say taller and then we don't say more easy, we say easier. They go, so then I can show the rule. So this way is much more engaging than just showing loads of rules and saying memorize. After that, my topic was the Guinness Records book. This is something that everyone knows. So I go like, oh, have you heard of it? Yeah, yeah. So what is the book about? And they go, well, the most beautiful. So you see, they are already practicing superlatives. Mm-hmm. Oh, the tallest, the biggest, the most beautiful. So I show them some records. And for example, a lady eating pasta. And I go like, what do you think is the name of this record? And they have to think about it. So you see, this is much more engaging than just showing something and say, okay, what do you think this is? The tallest, the biggest, the fastest?
Yeah.
So this would be my first advice. It's like, even if you don't have this outgoing personality, that you don't have this, it's not easy for you to connect with people, because yes, for me, it's really easy to connect. But if you don't have it, if you choose the right activities and different topics, sometimes I can be talking about recycling, but I'm not going to be like, okay, what are the rules of recycling? What I do instead is, for example, do you like pizza? Yes. Right. So let's imagine that you eat pizza today. Would you recycle the cardboard box of pizza? Oh my God. So you make them think. And when you make them think, and I'm laughing, I mean, you know, we are having fun. And when you make them think, this really helps them to learn and to remember after 2 or 3 weeks. So if I ask my students today, can you recycle a cardboard box of pizza? They're going to say, no, because it's too greasy. Greasy, you see? So they learned this word and it's there just because you did it in a very engaging way. So this would be my advice, you know? I'm not saying that you cannot use course.
I think that ironically, like a lot of things you're talking about, Mary, are the actual underlying rationales of communicative language teaching.
Yeah.
It's just that a lot of the time, the way communicative language teaching is presented, even on CELTAs and CERT Trinity courses, is not necessarily in that way. They present it a little bit in more of a kind of a structured way with things like PPP.
Yeah.
And like the stigmatization, one of the things we talked about with Jay McKeddie is the stigmatization of teacher talking time. The idea that the fact that the teacher's talking somehow becomes something you necessarily need to reduce or eliminate. And he argued that although, you know, it is important for that talk to have some sort of a purpose, it might make more sense to talk about the quality of the teacher talk, which, you know, you just gave some examples of very high quality teacher talk, right? Mm. Where you're getting them into a conversation, getting into rapport, and you're getting onto the topic in a very natural conversational way.
Yes, that's it. So, yeah, I think it's a matter of choosing the right things to talk about and thinking about different things. So, you know, not the typical. So you can use typical topics, for example, hobbies. You have to talk about hobbies with your students, especially if they're going to take an exam. But you don't have to be talking about, okay, so your hobby is writing. No, it's reading. So you can do these things. For example, I had a photo. I was doing this yesterday. I've got a photo of a guy on a train. And apparently in Germany, it's a hobby for people to surf on the trains. And then you've got this photo and you've got a photo of people surfing on trains in India. And then they are comparing the photos, which is part, for example, of the Cambridge oral exam, most of exams, right? They've got this comparison. So compare photos, describe the photos, but you are comparing two things that are really catching your attention. They are really grabbing your attention. So the tendency of you remembering is just, you know, easier. That's it.
Yeah, so they have that novel experience. And I do like the idea of personalizing classes, personalizing it to, you know, interests to get engagement, especially like with the talking about the Eiffel Tower and have you ever been there, and relating it to stimulating parts of their mind where it would be related to memories that they have, that they can, it's kind of already building on that foundation. There's this idea with building habits, for example, where one of the best ways to build a habit is to, when you start a new habit, is to join it onto a habit that you already have. So, you know, like when you're, if you want to start taking pills, your pills, and make sure you take your pills every, you know, I take crazy pills every morning. And if I want to make sure that I take those pills, you know, I'll put the pill box next to my toothbrush, because I'm very
right,
regularly.
Because you have to,
it's kind of, I kind of see it as that same sort of principle, you know, like if you, if they've got all these happy memories, all these memories that they always come back to, why not tie those into the language points? And, you know, and then also the, everyone should be doing something that's discovery or inductive related, you know, with, especially when teaching grammar, because they need to be actively engaged. I feel students, if you're just passively showing them stuff, then it's just like watching TV. You don't remember your TV show that you, everything that you remember from like 2 weeks ago. But, you know, like if you're more engaged with something, then you know, it sticks, and you have to be thinking about it and following it through. It's not, you don't just show, but, you know, ask and see, you know, where they come, where their mindset. And it is actually really interesting as well, because it's also useful for the teacher as well, because if you ask them, well, why do you think this grammar point or these words are used in this way, you kind of get an insight into their thinking. And then the more you do that, the more you're like, I could predict how
exactly you can understand how this student is and how they learned. It's another very
important
thing.
And then you can meld their mind.
Yeah, and it's really important, because obviously some students, they are more visual. Some students, they are more, you know, they have to listen to things. So it's really important as well for you to, at the beginning especially, you know, try loads of different things so you can really understand how the person works. Obviously, I'm talking about personalized, you know, I'm talking about one-to-one lessons. Obviously, I know that it's very difficult for students that they have to teach 20, 30 students to do the same. But the topics thing, the engaging topic things can help, you know, everyone. So this would be my first thing. And I was going to say that if, especially for, even for YouTube, is the same. When I started, I had no idea what I was doing. Actually, I didn't really think about becoming a YouTuber, let's say. But what I learned in 1 year is that people don't really want to see academic stuff on YouTube. They are not there for academic stuff. So this is sad.
That's what we focus on.
You know, I don't know. I had a talk, you know, with, I don't know if you know this guy. His name is Fergus Faden, and he's an Irish guy. He's an Irish teacher. He prepares, he's a Celta tutor. And we were talking about it, that he's got a very nice channel, amazing content. And we were talking about number of views, because he's had his channel for like a long time. In my channel, obviously, in 1 year, I don't, well, probably obviously, you know, my channel. So it's not easy to go in 1 year. I went from zero to 6,000, more than 6,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's because I realized that his content, for example, is so useful and is fantastic, but not many people are going to stop by to watch a 1 hour video or a 1 hour and a half video talking about, you know, how to improve your writing. So this is sad, because obviously if you want to succeed on YouTube, you do have to become a bit of the entertainer that people want to see. So I think humans in general, it's not just our students specifically, we in this, you know, at the moment, like nowadays, our attention span is very short, and we are constantly being bombarded, you know, by Instagram and messages and, you know, from all over. So basically, I do believe in this micro learning. What is the word for this? The micro learning theory, that is also nice to teach people, but with short information, short periods of time, this way they're going to learn more. The same for Instagram, for example. Obviously, a student is not going to learn English on Instagram, but I do believe that teaching them some lexical chunks or some example, my students, they have a problem with it depends on. They're always going to say it depends off.
Yeah.
So, oh, do you like, I don't know, going out? Oh, it depends off. And you go, no, it depends on. It depends on. And they don't learn. And then if you put this on Instagram and you tag them, go like, yes, I remember. It depends on. So it works for some things, you know. So this micro learning, this chunks of language, you know, this works. But yeah, in general, we just don't pay attention to things when they are too serious or too long. That's the reality.
I have a very interesting kind of anecdote about that my English learning YouTube channel, I started it, I think, about 10 years ago. Longer than 10 years. It was about 2009, I think, when I started it. And back when I started it, I was a completely new teacher. I mean, I knew nothing about teaching English. So when I went on and I did those videos, it's like you said, I absolutely focused on entertainment. And back then, it wasn't as technical as it is now. Now you kind of, you clip out the silence and you edit it in a way that everything's flying around and things are kind of going on in the video and keeping people's attention. But back then it was just like, you were just kind of entertaining in front of the camera. And one of the interesting things that I saw was as I learned more about being a teacher and I had actually more useful things to tell people. Mm-hmm. So I'd start talking about how to pronounce things and how to do the mouth and the, you know, phonemes and connected speech and all this kind of stuff. And my channel actually went like this while I was like putting more and more expertise into it because I was focusing much less on, as you say, the kind of entertainment factor.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. So that's why channels like this one that I mentioned, you know, amazing content. The content is so valuable, but people don't really stop by to watch it because they don't really have time for this, or they think, they have. There is this FOMO, this fear of missing out. And loads of students, they mention this to me. Like sometimes I send them a 20-minute video to watch and they go like, 20 minutes? Wow. Like, yeah, just only 20 minutes. And they go, no, but it's because I feel I could be doing something else. So this is how the society is at the moment. So when I realized that, you know, when I started my YouTube channel, and as I said, I didn't have them, that was not my goal to become a YouTuber, but I was lucky enough to have my first video. I'm so ashamed of it because I obviously was unedited and very bad, but I don't know how the first day that I posted my first video, I had 1,000 views.
Wow.
So this is why, you know, in the second day, 2,000 views, in the third day, 3,000 views. So this is when I stopped and I say, well, there's something going on here. You know, there's something here that I can really start digging into. But I realized after some months this, that if I was talking about like serious things or very academic or very content, you know, real content, people don't watch. People don't watch it at the end, you know. So you see the retention of videos, and the videos that they watch most are the ones that I'm like, or show, you know, funny things or fun activities and stuff like that. And the ones that I'm talking about real stuff, they just, you know, drop the video after 2 minutes. So this is a decision that I had to make. I was like, okay, should I just continue with the type of things I'm doing, or should I become more like an entertainer? And obviously YouTube started to bring me some financial benefits. I was very lucky to, you know, to have like my first brand deal. I was only on 3 months on YouTube, and I had companies paying for, you know, brand deals and affiliate marketing. So that's why I decided, just okay, if I want to continue doing that, it needs to be short, engaging, and that's it. So I'm not like, I don't consider myself like a clown, but I do a lot of editing and, you know, the
edutainment
effect.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's edutainment, isn't it?
Nothing wrong with that at all. You know,
yeah, but no, sometimes I feel a bit guilty, you know, because then you go and you start studying a Delta and they talk about these very dense things and you go like, oh my God, so basically when I started Delta and you know that with time, obviously, you start building your own methods and your own. And I took my Trinity TESOL 3 years ago. So I didn't really remember this lesson planning thing with small details in the minutes. So when I started Delta, you know, I was like, oh my God, I just released a video on YouTube saying that you shouldn't do any of this, you know, for your lesson planning. And I was, should I remove this from? And then I was like, no, I've got 5,000 views and people are still commenting on it. This is helping.
I can't speak for the Delta, but I did the Trinity Diploma in 2016. And actually my experience of the Trinity Diploma was that they were very open to alternative ways of doing things. And in fact, they kind of encouraged alternative alternative methods and alternative ways of teaching. It might have been down to the course director at the time, who was Nicola Meldrum. Mm-hmm. She was very good at Oxford TEFL in Barcelona. So I can't speak for everyone, but the one thing that they didn't go away from is this idea of lesson plans and language objectives and all this kind of stuff, which I also feel needs a revision, because it is too hard and fast, and it's not necessarily the best way of learning or how most people teach once they go out into the world.
Yeah, especially with the online teaching thing. And this is one of the things also that I love teaching online, but at the same time I'm not very comfortable with, well, not comfortable, that's not the word, but I think that I'm not enjoying my Delta as much as I enjoy my Trinity Certiso, because I'm taking Delta online and it's not the same. So I don't know, for students, personalized students, it might be a fantastic idea to, you know, to have these online lessons, but for this kind of courses, so sometimes I question, you know, the future of online teaching, because it's not the same. You know, basically what they did, you know, the school, well, I'm not going to mention the school, but basically the school, what they did is the online course is a transcript of what the teacher would have said in real life.
Right.
But it's not the same. So basically you are reading, but you are not reading a material. You are reading like as if the teacher were talking to you. Do you understand myself?
So no, basically, I'm totally lost. You mean like a script of
it's
the,
like
seminar,
it's like they
something.
Film themselves and then someone's taken all the words and written down what they've worked.
Let me start again, because this was a very bad explanation. So basically, as you read the material, is as if someone were talking to you. So it goes like, okay, so what? And the material is questioning you all the time. Look, so what would you do? Think about this for a minute. So it's like you are talking to someone, right, but you are not, because it's
like they've written it in a dialogic way with those kind of
so questions. It's like a transcript of what a teacher would say in real life, but you don't have this interaction because you are reading it. It's a text. You cannot reply back. So some tasks, for example, they take me for hours.
I have seen that done quite well, actually, Mary, but not just a text like that. I did a MOOC, and that's an online course, like 10 years ago. And it was a little psychology course, and the guy was great. And what he'd do is he'd do a video, and then at the end of the video, it'd be the short video, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. At the end of the video, he'd ask a question, and then a text box would pop up, and you had to type your answer into the text box. And then it actually worked, right? Because he'd ask you a question like, "Oh, what do you think about this?" Then you type your answer, press enter, and then the video would come back on, and he'd say, "Well, maybe you said this, and maybe you said that."
So yeah, there's a kind of interaction. With the one I'm taking, there's no interaction at all, and then sometimes it's going to take me for hours to do a task. Yeah. And then I told my tutor, I said, look, I'm a bit demotivated, because to be honest, and she told me, don't worry too much about these tasks, because in real life, they are 1 hour lessons that we do in groups. So obviously they took these lessons and in a transcript, in a text, this became a 4 hour task with no interaction. So you are not talking back, you know, so they are making you think, but you don't just want to think, you have to discuss, because sometimes you're thinking the wrong thing.
It's possibly an issue with the implementation of what they're doing there. I'm a little bit wary of time, Mary, because I think you have to go.
No, that's all right. That's all right. Because you couldn't see it, but I messaged a person here and we do have some extra minutes.
All right. Okay.
Sorry, yeah, no,
I was a bit wary of that because the kind of wrapping up does take a little bit, and you want a chance to sort of plug the things you do and the channels that you have and stuff like that.
Well, so basically at the moment, my channel, I'm just in the process of rebranding everything because, as I said, it wasn't meant to be a brand at the beginning. So basically now it's becoming something because I do have some affiliate marketing things going on and brand deals. So this is really bringing me money. So I've decided I've got a logo now. So I've just created my own logo like 2 weeks ago, and I'm working on a website. So what I'm planning on doing is, especially for now, the newest thing is going to be, I've been interviewing people. So when I was working for schools, I was interviewing people for the schools as well. So I was interviewing interns or teachers, or so I'm actually very good at job interviewing and CVs and stuff like that. So every time I change my student CV, in 2 days they've got like 5 interviews. So I've decided I was going to prepare a course on this. So this is what I'm doing at the moment. So I'm recording. It's going to be a very short course. So I'm going to teach people how to have an engaging CV that is going to make people call you for jobs. So this is very good, especially for, let's say, Spanish people. There are most of my students that are in Ireland. They are Spaniards, but they are working and living in Ireland. They are not here. Most of them, they are primary teachers. So they are working, or early childhood teachers, and they're working for creches, for nurseries in Ireland. And I help all of them to get jobs. So this is what I'm working on at the moment. So it's going to be this short course, especially for students, you know, that they don't know how to translate their CV and how CVs work in other countries.
I think you're definitely onto a good thing there. I mean, just you talking about it now, I'm interested. I'm kind of thinking, oh, my CV needs a bit of revision, actually.
Yeah, so I'm just, the thing is, obviously, I'm not a company, so it's very hard for me to think about strategies and everything, because I have to think about all stuff. I have to think about the websites, the marketing. I don't really have money to invest on marketing, so I have to do everything myself. And at the moment, I'm doing this, so I'm finishing. I'm going to finish this course, but it's going to be like 2 hours, you know, and then if the person wants an extra personalized class for me to create their CV with, then they will have to pay, obviously, for the extra service. Mm-hmm. But to do that, obviously, I have to have a website. So at the moment, I created a website, but I'm not very happy with the prices, you know, so basically, I'm still looking for a website that can really be interesting for this kind of business, you know. Just so I'm going to try to migrate more towards online courses rather than online teaching, because online teaching, you cannot escalate.
There's no scale, right?
No, you've got 24 hours. You can teach more hours, but you're just going to end up, you know, being crazy. And this happened to me not long ago, that I was taking, you know, what is the name of it? I don't remember the name, like a medicine, you know, just to slow down a bit and to relax, because I was too stressed. Yeah. So my idea is, as I mentioned before, we are going to leave Spain, hopefully. So we were in the process of getting the visa and everything ready to go back to Australia. But for some personal reasons, we decided we are going to try Canada. For now.
Hey.
Yeah, that's right. But not Vancouver, right? So Montreal. And basically, so this is what I'm up to at the moment. So I'm building this first course. I'm thinking about maybe creating a course for online teachers that want to go solo, so they can learn how to market themselves without spending money. Because this is what I did. I didn't spend €1, zero, nothing at all, you know, to start my own business. And if you see my computer, you don't want to see it, but it's all broken. I cannot move it. I cannot touch it. And it's constantly charging all the time. I cannot take it out of the screen. But anyway, so I want to show people that it's very possible to start this without financial, because people see my Instagram and say, oh my God, this girl, she should be a billionaire, you know, the glamour. And there's nothing glamorous about my life. Nothing at all. It's just the way that you show yourself, you know, the way that you sell yourself. It's the same for a CV. You can be a fantastic professional, but if you don't sell yourself in the nice way, in the proper way, people are not going to buy it. So that's the same thing for my Instagram, my Facebook. So is this make it until you know, fake it until you make it, something like that, right? I don't remember exactly. Fake it until you make it. So I want to show people that it is possible to start. If you've got the passion and if you've got the knowledge, obviously, I'm not saying that people should start just teaching, you know, like, well, I think I like teaching, I know English, I'm a native, and like, no, I really think qualifications are really important, and really, you know, taking your time to understand what language teaching is, this is incredibly important. But once you've got the knowledge, and if you've got the passion or the need, it is possible to start your own online business without financial investment. So I'm thinking about maybe starting, creating a course on this as well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a bit oversaturated because I know there are many teachers doing the same. So, but this is my life at the moment, just thinking about courses so I can just, you know, go towards online courses instead of online lessons so I can have a life.
Yeah, I think it's quite important as well. And it's an important point for teachers that are that have gone their own way and moved away from working from schools and started to work from themselves. You do get to the point where you realize you only have a certain amount of hours in the day. And how do you go about scaling and increasing your earning potential? Yeah, you could raise your prices. Sure.
Yeah.
Or you can start doing group classes, but then online, how do you do that? That's a little bit more difficult. And then, so you got to get more creative. Well, then scaling might be the form of creating a YouTube channel or some sort of social media. It could be creating a book, it could be creating a course. So I think that's something that people teachers really need to start kind of baking into the cake if they're going to make this into a career, because it's otherwise there's a ceiling. So you kind of you need to start thinking about this stuff, and
so that's why I really think it's important to have, if you are not, because YouTube is hard, obviously it's very hard, you know, so it wasn't easy. As I said, I was lucky to have like loads of views at the beginning, but that's not the normal, that's not common, you know. So basically it's a lot of work, and you have to have these companies, you know, you have to have obviously charisma as well, so companies want to work with you, and real ability and all this kind of stuff. So this, I wouldn't say this is the easiest way to go, because it is really hard, and I don't make a living out of YouTube at the moment, so it's something extra. But about the lessons, yes, it is possible, and I would say then the best thing would be having a niche. Because if you have a niche, the recommendations are going to follow, and then it's easier for you to group them.
Yeah.
You see, so in my case, as I teach, most of my students at the moment are teachers in Ireland. They all have the same needs. So it's easy for me, and all of them, they've got like a B1, B2 level, so intermediate level. So it's easier for me to say, hey, girls, I can't do private lessons anymore. I've got this and this time, Tuesdays and Thursdays. So what do you think about, you know, let's just do one lesson, a trial lesson just for you to see. And then you just do, you know, the best, your best, you know, to impress them in this first lesson. And they're going to say, well, wow, this is what I need. So this way you can scale a bit, you know, but obviously raising your, or you can try to find specific groups of people that they've got a tendency of having more money. So, for example, teaching pilots, I've got a pilot student, and I'm not saying they're all rich, but yes, they do have a bit more, you know. So, or teaching engineers in certain areas. So this is something that people don't really think about. They go like, I get loads of messages, people saying, how can I start? So how can I find my first student? And I just go on Facebook. And they go, well, but how can I go on Facebook? I'm going to post there, my family and friends are going to see it. Not on your profile. Just join, for example, engineers in India. I'm sure hundreds of engineers in India, they speak English there. I've been to India. I've been to 43 countries. That's a nice thing. So basically, I know they speak English, but they have to improve. And if they're engineers, it's likely, obviously, not overgeneralizing, but it's likely that they are going to have a stable job. They're going to have money to pay a bit more. So just go on engineering. engineer is in India, engineer is in Switzerland, because Swiss people, they tend to pay better rates than, for example, Portuguese or a Spanish student. So if you choose the right niche, and if you know how to go, you know, you go like to the right places, 100% sure you're going to get one or two students. And this is what you need. Because once you have these two, if you impress them, if they really like you, I mean, if they think your teaching is effective, 100% sure, there's always a friend that need English. There's always, I mean, there are, according to the British Council, there are like 1.5 billion people learning English. Mm-hmm. And some teachers say, no, online teaching is oversaturated. And I go like, come on, you don't know. How can you say this is oversaturated? There are more than 1 billion people learning English. Go and find them, you know. So, and you don't have to spend money. So basically, it's just a matter of thinking strategically and thinking, posting on Facebook, my grandmother, she doesn't need English, you know, obviously. I'm not going to post on my page. But there are thousands of groups that you can go, or there are thousands of Instagram accounts. So, for example, if you go to, well, this, I don't know. I mentioned this to a teacher once, and she told me, yeah, this is a bit, it's a bit dangerous. Well, not dangerous, but basically what I was doing at the beginning when I had no followers on Instagram, I was going to language schools accounts, and I was following their students. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not hurting anyone. And then this, I knew that this, I was not messaging them or texting them, nothing at all, just following them. So these people, they were going to my profile, and they were like, ah, wow, this lady is a teacher, follow. And they would start a conversation. So I got loads of students doing that. And people don't really think about these free, easy things to do. So I think it's a bit of strategy, you know, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's an excellent, you've given excellent a points.
Lot. Yeah, I was just about to say exactly the same thing. Actually, I think you've got a lot of very interesting things to say about that.
I think it really helps with your kind of your business and entrepreneurial background of being kind of thrown in at the deep end so early on. One thing I'd like to jump on and carry on with that is, when you were talking, and I was thinking, you know. One of the problems with the English language teaching industry is we kind of just think of it as one thing, but it really is kind of more like the hospitality industry or you know, like the restaurant industry. You know, the a food truck could be very successful, a high-end restaurant could be very successful, a chain could be very successful, but they're only really very successful because they know what they're delivering to their customers, and yeah. they have the margins that meet what the services that are providing. So someone that's doing a food truck's not gonna go after the really rich person, so they're going to, you know, maybe go for the day-to-day person that's not gonna charge as much, but they're gonna get more people through the door, and that's how they're gonna make their money.
Yeah,
and I kind of feel like that's a thrust of your point is when you're becoming a teacher, don't just kind of trawl the internet and trawl all the English language speakers. Really niche down and get good at doing a specific target audience, however you want to target customer, however you want to put it. And that's going to be one way to differentiate yourself and to kind of, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you can grow out from there. But I also want to relate it back to one of your earlier points as well with teaching and grouping students together because you can reuse material. I think the same can be said for also business-wise. So, you know, like if you're creating a lesson, for example, then maybe you can turn that lesson into a video, or maybe you're doing a blog post, then you can start collecting those blog posts and turn it into a book. Or, yeah. you know, you have a whole bunch of interviews or even past work experience. How can you relate that to what you're doing with English teaching now and to create a course? You know, there's a whole bunch of ways where you've got to think in the same way as when you're doing with your lesson planning, but with your business. How can you do do two things at once.
Exactly. To optimize the time. That's it. So, you know, to be, so I do consider myself a highly productive person, and it's not because I've got more hours than anyone else. It's just because that's what I try to do, you know, just try to do not, I'm not saying that I do loads of things at the same time. Well, sorry, I do message sometimes while I'm talking with people. So, but what I'm saying is just seeing what thing, which things can be grouped together, or what you can do to save. So this is actually the goal of my YouTube channel. The goal of my YouTube channel is to help teachers save time. So I'm presenting loads of activities that they require no preparation. So sometimes it happens to me that I'm in a hurry. There's something, you know, there's something happening in my personal life and I cannot really prepare a lesson. And then sometimes I watch my own videos. Remember, because there are some activities that don't require preparation, and they work so well. So for example, one that I use quite a lot and students love is just a blank slide, and I go, well, this is our lesson today. They go, what are you saying? So I ask them, do you have your phone with you? Yes. So can you go on Google and just choose an image, but not very complicated, a simple image, and they go and choose an image. And this already, you know, generates interest, because they're like, what is going to happen? And I just tell them, okay, very easy. I'm going to use this to draw the image. So you are going to describe the image to me, and I'm going to draw it. And you can spend 1 hour doing that. And it's not going to be a waste of time, because they are going to work on prepositions. They are going to say in the background, on the left, at the top. Mm-hmm. They are going to work on descriptions. So, well, in the middle, yeah, there is a lady, she has curly hair. So they have to work on so many things, and you don't have to prepare at all. You need a blank slide, you know? So that's the goal, the main goal of my, well, it's inform as well and recommend things as well, but that's the main goal of my channel, to show teachers that you don't have to spend 3 hours preparing an activity for the activity to be efficient. If you really know how to group things together, so I need them to work on prepositions, I need them to work on descriptions, poof, this, you have a blank slide, mm-hmm. and that's it. So you don't waste your time on it. So yeah, that's it. I would say grouping things and optimizing the time. That's a great thing for people to learn. How to be productive, you know, for people to be more productive.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
That's it. Are you kind of absolutely now?
Absolutely marvelous, Mary. Yeah, I think you have a lot of very, very, very good advice to give to teachers and to people just in a business sense as well. And it's been very interesting to hear about those things from you.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Basically, my channel is called Just Teach, you know, so people, if they want to look for it right now, they can do it. It's Just Teach by Little Mary. And I'm working on a very interesting series at the moment and very useful. It's called the EOT Glossary. So basically, I'm gathering teachers from all over the world. So because I also want to show diversity, you know, I want to show that teachers don't have to be from a certain country or a certain accent. So I'm really careful, you know, I'm looking for teachers from all types of backgrounds, and I'm gathering these people to talk about EOT terms. So I will have the pleasure, not yet, but yeah, I will have the pleasure to have you too explaining some terms, some approaches on my channel. And I think this is going to be very useful, especially for people, you know, taking the CELTA course or Trinity TESOL or a master's, because this terminology is needed. And it's a bit boring to be reading dictionaries. So it's a very nice way to learn what drilling is or dogme or, you know, all these things that we have to know. And that's it. So don't forget to check my channel and check their video when the video is up, because it's not up yet. And that's it. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me and for having patience, because I talk way too much.
No, it's been wonderful. Neil, you want to go? You want to do your thing?
Oh, yeah. So if you're looking for more information about myself, you can check out teamteacherchina.com. We've got a whole bunch of PowerPoint materials that you can download and use instantly in the classroom. We've got Team Teacher China, the YouTube channel, where we kind of show you how to use those materials. Team Teacher English, where we take those materials, put it into self-study videos. And Team Teacher English, where I take my experience teaching and put it into parenting. And Professor Rich?
Who's letting the team down, I think, because I feel like I'm surrounded by two entrepreneurs doing all kinds of stuff. And I'm trotting around with my, you've got youtube.com/ProfessorRich, old YouTube channel, a bit of teaching information there. You can email me at eltunderthecovers@gmail.com. If you would like to come on the show and do an interview with us, or you have anything to contribute to the conversation.
Yeah, and both Rich and I from ELT Undercovers will be on Mary's channel giving our own glossary videos. So you should definitely go there and check that out. And Mary, can you give us the links and addresses of your YouTube channel?
The YouTube channel is Just Teach by Little Mary. Previously it was Teacher Little Mary, but as it started to grow a bit, I thought like I need like a brand name, because if in the future I hire someone, I don't want them to be saying that they are working at Teacher Little Mary, because this sounds a bit strange. So the name of the channel right now is Just Teach by Little Mary. My Instagram is, I never remember my Instagram. My Instagram is teacher_littlemary. Yeah, something like that. So you're okay. Going to find it. If you did Teacher Little Mary, and you're going to find me everywhere. I've got a Facebook page as well, but I don't use it that much. I just post some events, conferences, you know, more academic things for teachers that like, you know, to read and events and this kind of stuff, but I don't use it that much. So yeah, just Google Just Teacher Little Mary, and you're going to see my face everywhere.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's Thanks been so very much. Informative, and I'm in awe of your work ethic.
Yeah, I feel the same way, actually. I really get the impression that you've worked incredibly hard for the place where you are. And I think your experience in doing that gives you a perspective on a lot of things that a lot of other teachers don't have. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's very interesting to hear you talk about them.